A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We're all about community, growing community through commerce, making our part of the world just a little bit better. Building community, that's what business does really well. Helps you get on that path to success. Speaking of success, we are proudly presented by the good community-minded people at Horicon Bank. Today, it's commerce and community, maybe from a bit of an unlikely connection. But it's Mental Health Awareness Month, so we're going to connect with issues around those emerging from adversity. The organization Wisconsin Community Services works hand-in-hand to create pathways to education and mentorship to remove barriers for individuals in our community who are incarcerated, emerging from incarceration to be active members in the workforce. WCS President and CEO Clarence Johnson will join us in studio, and Martin Moore will pop in for a future of almost everything. The internet is now the splinternet, we will discuss. Chinese cars, when are we going to see them, and what's the innovation all about in China? Summerfest has announced it's free days to get in, but there's a local music CEO that has some interesting thoughts about Summerfest. I pulled his post from Facebook, and I think you're going to be really interested to see what he says about Summerfest. And summer movies for half the price. One big national cinema has a special deal for you this summer. But as we do each and every morning, we are going to go two up.
Now it's time for the
two, count 'em, two.
Two up on the upswing.
First up, two things in the business world that I'm seeing that you need to know right now. There's a new richest person in Wisconsin. Billionaire Diane Hendricks has overtaken John Menard Jr. as the richest person in the state. This is according to the annual Forbes list that notes all the wealthiest people in the United States. With a net worth of over $21.9 billion, Hendricks is one of 10 women nationwide were on the richest residents lists in their states. She's the co-founder of the Beloit-based ABC Supply Company, a wholesaler distributor of roofing supplies and one of the largest distributors of siding and windows in North America. Before this year, Eau Claire resident John Menard obviously owns and is a part owner of the home improvement retailer. Menards was named the richest person for the last three consecutive years. As of May 12th, his real-time net worth was $21.7 billion, so coming in just shy of Diane Hendricks. Hendricks also edged out Menard in the Forbes list on the national level, coming in 90th. Forbes dropping down to 92nd. I got to tell you, this weekend, as you're searching social, search for the Menards country jingle. You're going to get a really good laugh. It's super funny. Kind of has this creative spin on the 11% rebate that probably none of us ever use enough, but it's super, super funny. Diane Hendricks, by the way, is 78 years old. Second up, pause those Amazon ads. Community, content, commerce, that's what the show is all about. Well, it's here on our TV screens now. So imagine you are kind of sobbing through that tearjerker of a show, watching Prime Video at home. Now all you have to do is press pause, and a little ad for your Amazon account is going to come up, and you can buy your Kleenex or your tissue on the spot. That's the vision, and it's actually a reality now, that Amazon laid out this week, using AI to generate pause ads related to whatever you're watching. Pause ads have been around for a long time, but the company hasn't really put them into full force. They have a massive audience. They have all of our data. The ad tier of Prime Video now reaches more than 130 million Americans. I'm pretty excited to see where these pause ads go. Because, you know, just think, maybe you're going to watch, like, The Summer I Turned Pretty this summer. And you're going to get served with travel ads based upon what you're looking for. There's so much personalization, community, commerce. It's here. The use cases for Amazon pause ads are going to be absolutely amazing to watch. When we come back, a different definition of community is next. Clarence Johnson, president and CEO of Wisconsin Community Services, Inc., joins us in studio. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Clarence Johnson joins us. Clarence is the president and CEO of Wisconsin Community Services. He's led the organization through a really impactful time, growing the organization and really innovating with the ideas that he brings to the table. Under his leadership, WCS has expanded its programs to address the complex intersection of justice, behavioral health, housing, and workforce development for thousands of individuals and families across southeastern Wisconsin. New initiatives are on the table, ranging from entrepreneurship training to returning citizens to supportive housing and peer recovery programs. Johnson's vision is helping to reshape southeastern Wisconsin and really build collective well-being. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, so it's only one reason we wanted to have Clarence on this morning, but to talk about all the things that WCS does. Clarence, I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Jeff, for the invitation. Good to be here.
Of course. So as I look at WCS, you're a bit of a sleeping giant in the community. You have so many initiatives. You do so much. Kind of give us the overview of the organization and tell us about some of your main programs.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, Wisconsin Community Services, or WCS, is a sleeping giant. We were founded in 1912, by the way, Jeff, as the Society for the Friendless. So we've been around for over 100 years, serve about 17,000 people annually. Our roots are essentially steeped in criminal justice. But over the past 40 years, to your point, we've really focused more on expanding, elevating our behavioral health services and programs because we recognize the complex interaction of behavioral health and justice-involved people. So, yes, over 60 programs to address mental health needs in our community, substance use needs, workforce needs, as you mentioned, also working with both youth and adults. Workforce and housing as well. And there is really so much more to tell you about the organization, and really happy to be here to be able to do that.
Of course. So that intersection between behavioral health and criminal justice system is a longstanding challenge, without a doubt, right? How does your organization work to integrate behavioral health tools and to get people back into and re-enter the community after incarceration?
Sure. Well, let me start off by saying our primary focus is to prevent people from becoming justice-involved, and whether it's youth or adults, and providing services to people in the community who have complex mental health needs or substance use needs. And from our perspective, if we're able to address those in the community, a person is far less likely to become justice-involved. These are people that really have some pretty significant needs and who have a challenging time accessing services and supports. And so our perspective is if we can meet them where they are in the community, we'll improve community safety, keep people from incarceration, and also lower costs associated with incarceration and other variables that are residual impacts of unmet needs. And to your point also, once a person is justice involved, how do you keep them from recidivating? How do you provide the supports and services to ensure that they have minimal contact moving forward? So working with people in a pretrial phase or post-conviction or release to make sure that when they're in the community, we're there to provide services that are going to be impactful to reduce the likelihood that they'll continue to be involved with the criminal justice system.
We're talking with Clarence Johnson, president and CEO of Wisconsin Community Services. So WCS, Clarence, recently began providing electronic monitoring services in Waukesha County, correct?
Yes, correct.
As an alternate to incarceration. What are some of the broader implications of this shift, maybe just from a public safety and community standpoint, are there big cost savings from a community level?
Well, first thing, Jeff, is that we've been doing electronic monitoring for almost 40 years, so for quite a while. This is nothing new to us, and we think we're very good at doing it. So to your point, the Waukesha County Sheriff's Office, there was a closing of a Huber facility in Waukesha, which meant that the jail population was likely to see an increase. And, of course, that means also increased costs for Waukesha County. So we partnered with Waukesha County Sheriffs to introduce for them electronic monitoring, which is GPS and devices that we call SCRAM and remote breath. And we have about, on average, 110, 15 people daily on electronic monitoring. By doing that, we're able to lower that jail population and also save Waukesha County. Let me put it this way. The annual cost to incarcerate someone in a state prison is about $50,000. At a local level, in local jails, it's between $30,000 and $35,000 annually.
Okay.
So you know, multiply that times 100 or so people, you can see how the cost savings would be very appealing. But I think also more importantly, doing so really improves community safety. It gets people back into their communities, connected with their families, working.
Allows them to work.
Yes. And doing things, again, that will lower the likelihood that they'll recidivate in the future.
We're talking with Clarence Johnson, President and CEO of Wisconsin Community Services. Clarence, when we come back, I want to talk about the community that you are in. You have a building on 37th in Wisconsin and one on 27th and North Avenue.
Yes.
And just want to talk about the transformation of both of those neighborhoods and kind of serving as a model and a conduit for the community. This is The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, and you are listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We're talking with Clarence Johnson. Clarence is the president and CEO of Wisconsin Community Services. So, Clarence, in terms of your two headquarters for WCS, talk a little bit about the neighborhood for each one of those buildings and how you're working to, you know, create even more community on North Avenue and on 37th and Wisconsin Avenue, just off of downtown here.
Yes. Well, as you mentioned, we have our main administrative office building at 37th and Wisconsin Avenue. We've been there now for almost 25 years, so a long time. We provide a number of services in the building. We just completed a couple of years ago a major remodeling of the first floor. Our goal was to make the building more accessible, warm, and welcoming for both our staff and people that are served inside of the building. We just finished remodeling the exterior of the building, and we'll hopefully do so for the second floor. But our presence is important because we wanted to be in a place in the community, Jeff, in terms of 37th and Wisconsin Avenue, that is accessible by bus, by different modes of transportation. Again, people who are served by WCS have some pretty complex needs, and oftentimes these services are accessible. So our presence makes a huge difference. And not only that, but we also partner with others in the community also. You and I were talking about the presence of Near West Side Partners in the Concordia neighborhood, Avenues West, and so we really work very closely with them and other stakeholders in the community. We're very close with the alderperson in the community, Alderman Russell Stamper. So our goal is to be a part of the vibrancy of the Near West Side, provide services that are accessible, really improve safety, community well-being, and make sure that we're a positive presence in that community.
Yeah, and that neighborhood's really becoming a beacon of sort for health and wellness initiatives, including the beacon that's coming to the former MPS school right on Wisconsin Avenue there.
Yes, yes, it is. And, you know, we certainly see ourselves as being a vital part of that operation. We've had some contact with the Aurora officials who are going to be launching that project. I have a long history, by the way, with Wisconsin Avenue School. So I'm excited to see that it's going to be revitalized, and obviously it's going to make ensure that people who are there have access not just to WCS services, but also to those that are provided and offered in the Beacon as well.
Yeah, it's really all about collaboration.
It absolutely is.
So how do you ensure, let's talk about the organization a little bit, that you're responsive to the kind of ever-evolving community needs and you have a sense of accountability across your broad portfolio. What does that look like each and every day, especially with so many walk-up services and needs just constantly changing in the community?
Well, for one thing, we are very intentional about listening to the voices of the people that we serve that's important to us so that they can inform us in terms of what's important to us. And we've also, over the past several years, done a really good job integrating into our service delivery platform or process people with lived experience. So in other words, we provide a range of mental health, substance use, and reentry services, and we do a lot to train and certify people who have that lived experience. And many of those individuals, they're called peer supports or peer specialists, will then come to work for WCS. And so we're always connected with the needs of the people that we serve. We do a lot as far as collaboration and partnering with others in the community, making sure that we're connected with our community in different ways, different stakeholders, and always open to hearing about new needs that need to be met or services that are central to the mission of WCS. So we can't do everything,
right.
Really focus on things that we do well and make sure that we're listening to people that we serve and also have a number of folks on our staff who have that lived experience.
Do you almost see the organization as a bit of a coach for people that need that need help? Is that ever a thought like, hey, you can come to us and we can help you provide that leadership or that direction and whatever you need?
Well, a large part of what we do is to empower people to live their most positive life. So we see ourselves as working in partnership with people that we serve. We have a really dynamic approach. It's called person-centered or strength-based. And we see the person that we serve really as leading the way. You tell us what's important to you. What are your goals? What are your objectives? And our role then is to support you in your endeavors and what you see in your life as being important.
All right. In 2024, you received the Wisconsin Council on Community Corrections Community Service Award.
Yes.
So you've received a lot of awards and accolades in your career. Just talk about that recognition and what it means in terms of your influence moving into the future.
Well, the organization, again, has been around for over 100 years, and I think there is significant recognition about the value, the impact that WCS have in the community. The Community Corrections Award represents our longstanding history of working with people who are just as involved and our commitment to making sure that those individuals coming back to our community really have a second chance to turn their lives around and have the supports that are needed, Jeff, to ensure that they're able to, you know, put their past transgressions behind them, not be labeled, they're not stigmatized, and given a platform to be successful. We see it every day in our community, and we have a number of people on our staff who are formerly incarcerated individuals, board members as well. And so we know the leadership qualities that they possess and the commitment that they have to really support others in the community in addition to themselves, living productive lives.
Yeah. And I'm sure you're always looking forward to the top priorities for the future. Is there anything from a policy standpoint that you're really striving for?
Well, I think probably the most important policy that our community can advance over the next several years, one is to make sure that we have enough resources in our community to support people when they have these needs so that you don't have to end up in systems, whether it's incarcerated in the hospital, in jail, but that you have resources in the community that are able to provide services that are necessary so that you don't end up in the deep end of the system. Investing in community supports, whether it's behavioral health needs, whether it's reentry, whether it's alternatives to incarceration, we believe is very, very important. And the return on investment is significant. It lowers costs, Jeff, and it also makes our community safer. So from a policy perspective, that's what we want to focus on.
All right. I'd like to end many of the interviews with a simple question. Clarence, define success.
Success for us is seeing the people that we serve as living productive, meaningful lives, and the staff that we employ to provide those services to have a positive experience and to make positive contributions in our community. That's really what WCS is all about.
Very good. Positive community connections. And then in addition to specific policy that you're looking to change, is there any concern, Clarence, with governmental entities cutting back on funding for the organization?
Well, there is, and we're in a climate now where There are significant risks in terms of government funding being scaled back. And for WCS, we rely heavily on government funding to provide what we call essential services. And so as those are rolled back, then it puts our services at risk. We also rely on private dollars, which we don't get enough of, quite frankly, to do things that our government funding doesn't pay for, such as improve our facilities and make sure that they're facilities that are safe, that are warm and welcoming. So what we would really ask the community to think about, Jeff, is that WCS, as again, we serve 17,000 people annually in Southeast Wisconsin, largest footprints in Milwaukee and Waukesha counties, supporting the organization to be able to do carry out its mission is really essential. So as government decides to roll back or reduce their funding levels, we really would look to the community more to support the work that we do because it does have such a positive impact in all of our communities in Southeast Wisconsin.
And the reality is that those funding sources all have to work together, right? I mean, you have to have the governmental funding, you have to have the nonprofit funding, and you have to have the private and corporate funding. And they should all work together, and it's not one or the other. If we're going to continue to lift our communities, we all have to take a stake.
It is very true. It's not just good public policy. It's good policy, and it's a really good return on investment also for our community.
Clarence Johnson, President and CEO of Wisconsin Community Services. Clarence, I really appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff.
It's time to fast forward. Welcome to the future of almost everything in Wisconsin on the upswing. Joining WTMJ's Jeff Sherman, here's Martin Moore.
Welcome back to the upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We are joined in studio by Martin Moore from Cost, content creator, and Moore, marketing manager at Cost Stereo Headphones. So, Martin, I have always have internet on my brain, it seems like.
Sure. But, don't we all?
Yeah,
unfortunately.
It just never leaves, right? It's just like this constant scroll.
Mm-hmm. It's like grub worms.
Yes. But somebody told me about this term the other day, the splinter net, and defined it like this. Really, that the web has become kind of a splintering and divided place due to, obviously, the political climate that we're in. But different technology, our different commerce choices, nationalism, religion, all these national interests that we all have difference in, right? But it made me think, all right, you go back to the early days of X, when it was Twitter, what is that marketplace for ideas? What is that marketplace for new ideas look like in today's splinternet?
I mean, I think it's still the same place. I think it's places like Reddit and X and Facebook and all of that. It's just different, and it's fragmented and segregated into sort of compartmentalized little pockets of people in a way that it never used to be. The internet has fostered echo chambers for people, whether you like Xbox versus PlayStation, Apple versus Android, Republican versus Democrat, gas versus electric. It really doesn't matter. Country versus city. Yeah. It really creates an environment where you can kind of ensconce yourself in the groups and peoples and cultures and tribalism that fit you best. And you can sort of ignore any other idea or proposition that someone might have for you that might go against whatever it is you believe. But I still think that those places can foster new ideas. And I think we do see ideas come out of those spaces still, even though it may not feel like it.
Yeah.
I still believe that those are still the spaces where the best ideas are going to come from.
I mean, the thing is, it doesn't seem like a long time ago, really.
Because it wasn't.
No, really. I mean, but it seemed like we had these really thoughtful, important community conversations online. And kind of that was what society wanted from social media. I mean, we always used to say at I'm Wonky that it was, you know, media is a conversation, not a sermon.
Sure.
But now the bigger platforms seem to be more so places to dump content and not have conversations.
You know, I am seeing conversation on places like Threads, on Blue Sky. Not so much on X, the way X has definitely changed since Elon took over. But I'm sort of seeing the infancy of what Twitter used to be when it first started on platforms like Blue Sky or Mastodon or Threads. And it's refreshing. And that's why I spend so much of my time now on Threads, because I'm getting sort of that old school. It's not just people screaming into a giant megaphone. You know, there's actual conversations and ideas that are happening, and people are engaging in very adult-like ways, which is sort of antithetical to what you see on things like X or even Facebook now.
I think you're really seeing that, you know, Blue Sky's taken over from that academic research standpoint.
Yes,
I mean, that's where academics, that's where college professors are going to provide, you know, their research and enlighten in a way that only college professors can.
100%. And so, you know, it may not feel like it if you sort of trapped yourself in some of these social media platforms that have been around for 10, 15, maybe almost 20 years. But, you know, if you participate and experiment in some of these newer ones, I think you'll find yourself in a DeLorean and back in time and kind of getting a taste of what early social media used to be like, when people had good conversations and had good ideas and people were listening more than speaking.
Yeah.
At least that's my experience.
All right. I want to talk a bit about the great Milwaukee summer. You were walking in here booking your MKE boat tours for the entire summer, like teeing up your entire summer on the river, which I love.
We'll be right back. I'm Jeff Sherman. This is The Upswing, and we are proudly presented by Horicon Bank. Welcome back to The Upswing. Service and products always go hand in hand at Horicon Bank. The business climate always changing. We're all about commerce and community. Your bankers at Horicon, they understand you and take care of you and your business. Give them a call.
Nothing says summer in Milwaukee like Summerfest. This week, Summerfest announced all of its get-in free dates. And I just picked a couple here to highlight. You look at June 19th. Festgoers can show up at any of the gates between noon and 3. You donate some food. You get in free. June 27th, I always say Milwaukee's a college town. You're a college student, you wear your gear, you get in free. But as we look at the free days in summer, Martin, at Summerfest, are all these free days creating a sense that, whoa, what's the perception of value at Summerfest if I can always find a way to get in for free?
Sure, like if you get free tickets from work or there's a free day. There's a lot of value when you go in. I mean, there's so much free music, free samples, free experiences. There's always local businesses and organizations giving things away and raffles and all that stuff. And so, I mean, there's value there. It's tough for Summerfest as an organization to sort of choreograph and implement all these free days, because they have staff they have to pay for. They have musical acts they have to pay for. There's infrastructure that has to be kept up and paid for.
And so, a nonprofit running as a business, and they have partners for each one of the days too.
Exactly. But I think it's great. I think, you know, especially this day and age, people are penny pinching, and, you know, sometimes these tickets can be very expensive. And just like anything, if you can get people in the door, they'll buy drinks, they'll buy food, they'll pay for experiences and tickets and stuff like that. And so I think it's a great thing that they're doing it, and I think it's something they should continue to look at and play with. They now have 4 or 5 years of post-COVID data to see, you know, when are there lulls, and I think during those lulls, that's when you open it up for free admission, and you sort of expand that if you keep seeing growth in that area. So I think it's a great opportunity, and I like it.
All right. One local music CEO, Gary Witt from the Paps Theater Group, saw a post from him just 3 days ago saying that year over year, Summerfest refuses to share any of the ancillary benefits from the visitors who come to the festival with any other local businesses, meaning local restaurants and bars, because they stay open to 11:30 or midnight. Gary's calling for the side stages of Summerfest to close at 10 p.m. What would you think of that?
Wow. 10 p.m. Listen, I'm 45. 10 p.m. is about the right time for that to close. That being said, most people who are going to Summerfest are interested in staying there till 11 or so. What time are they open till?
I think it's 11:30 or midnight. Okay.
Midnight seems a touch bit late. I think 11 or 11:30 would be fine. And so Summerfest isn't sharing what with?
The benefits of everyone coming to the Summerfest grounds, and then they're not going to the bars or restaurants afterwards. But you still have 2 hours.
Oh, gotcha. So they're letting people in for free, but people aren't actually paying for anything. And so the vendors and all that stuff aren't making money.
Right. Or the bars and restaurants in the area in greater downtown aren't seeing as much benefit.
Gotcha.
So it's an interesting thought. I mean, it's such a community-minded event. I mean, Summerfest does an amazing job, for sure. But if you closed a little earlier on one day, then would the collective benefit even more?
Sure, yeah. I mean, if you did close at 10, then you have people that might still be out on a Thursday night or a Friday, and they're like, well, let's go hit the bar, let's go hit a restaurant or something like that. So it's something that you play with. It's something that you definitely capture the data. You have a team of people that captures the data, and you tweak it in real time, and then you tweak it year over year. And eventually, the goal is in 2-3 years, you have enough information where you know what days to close early, you know what days to let people in for free, and it becomes much more streamlined. But there's definitely opportunities there to benefit Summerfest and benefit local businesses, I believe.
Very good. Got summer on my mind. We're going to talk summer movies when we come back. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Martin Moore. Martin, you're a car guy, right?
I worked on cars for 20 years. I know just a touch.
So what do you think here in the United States? Are we going to get all this innovation coming from Chinese automakers and really become global leaders now, especially in the EV space? A lot of innovation, but the entry into the U.S. market remains elusive. Mm-hmm. Are we going to see that in the next couple years?
Not in the next couple years, I don't think so. And I think with all the Japanese car makers, and then especially ones who have just been an uptrend for a decade, Hyundai, Kia, I think it would be a very tough market for China to crack, even if you got past all the political logistics and loopholes that you had to do to get them in here. Not to say that it couldn't happen, but I think we're probably a decade away from that.
I mean, you have that BYD Seagull that's like coming in at like $14,000, right. Really high quality components.
Sure.
Looks sleek.
Sure.
I don't know. Too many political barriers. Empower the consumer to get what we want.
There's also a lot of safety things that laws and features that those cars don't have to adhere to that you do in the United States. And that's where a lot of the costs come from. You know, like, not to say that they don't have airbags and seatbelts,
right.
But there's all kinds of things that there's crash tests and things that they have to implement. And as we all know, China can be a little more lax with that kind of stuff. We've all bought Chinese products and we know how long those last and how great those are compared to, you know, good old American made stuff. And that translates to vehicles. And so that's going to raise the prices. It's not like you're going to get a $14,000 Chinese made car. And if you do, you don't want to get a crash in it.
In the auto innovation space, what are two things that you really want to see, whether it's coming from China or not?
Two things innovation. I really want to see. One is going to be the entire infotainment system. You know, we're seeing Apple just released the CarPlay Ultra, which is, unless you own an Aston Martin, I think it's like the DB12 or whatever it is, which is the only one that gets this.
Yeah.
I mean, you can basically completely customize your dashboard, your infotainment screen with weather and apps and all this stuff. And I think that's going to be needs to be a major focus for auto manufacturers. I just got a 2025 Tucson, and I've never even touched CarPlay. I just love what Hyundai has done with the whole entertainment thing in there. Mm. And that's something I think needs to car manufacturers need to expand on. Yeah. And then the other one would just be, this is going to be very general, but there needs to be a universal charging standard in the United States. Europe has one. Right now, I think one of the biggest trepidations people have with EVs, aside from just range anxiety, is where do I charge it? And right now, it's getting better, but there's still, it's just very fragmented on where you can charge, what stations, how fast they are. There needs to be a universal charging standard. And that's a huge innovation that I think needs to happen sooner than later.
No attachments. Everyone's got to play nice in that space.
Exactly. And I believe, I could be making this up, but I believe Tesla made their charging standard open for anybody to use if they want to use it. I don't know. I'm pretty sure that's true. And if it is, you know, auto manufacturers need to jump on it, or the government needs to intervene and do something about it.
I got two things I want to see: pothole self discovery for sure. Ooh. The cars that go up and down based upon you know, what the road looks like. I think that technology is there.
They can test them out in Milwaukee.
Indeed, yes. And then looking at, you know, what does dash cam integration really look like? Mm. And could we get to a mandated standpoint? That's probably tough, but I think dashboard.
I think it will. I mean, so many cars already. I think lane departure now is already mandatory, the way that like airbags and backup cameras and all that stuff were. So, you know, you get that to record on all new vehicles. I don't think that's that hard. Most new vehicles have a camera on it already. You just need something to record it with and something to get that data.
So you're probably going to drive your car to the movies this summer, possibly.
Sure.
AMC Entertainment this week said it's going to cut the price of a movie ticket in the U.S. by half on Wednesdays as a way to attract more customers, not only on the weekends, but get them there on hump day. You see this move half off. Is it going to change your habits?
No, it's not. What will, though, is I don't know if you're familiar, but they just re-released Star Wars Episode 3 for the 20th anniversary, and it became the highest grossing re-release in cinema history. I think that's where they need, with all these feature films and stuff going to streaming, I really think releasing things like Back to the Future, Goonies, a lot of these older movies that people would love to see, or maybe they never got a chance to see in theaters, I think that's where there's a really big opportunity. I think you can make movie tickets free, and I still don't think people are going to go if the movie's not interesting. And so I really see re-releases is at least a little
so five. More of a subscription model and more personalized option. Would that get you to the cinema?
No.
There will be no community building for Martin.
No.
This summer at the movies. Anyway, I'll see you on a boat this summer.
Yes.
On the Milwaukee River. All right. Martin, I always appreciate your time.